although he may have talked a few politicians to death. That didn't seem to be much of a job for a war leader. Admittedly, they didn't seem to be all the little wars they used to be, but it was, well, not a proud kind of life. She walked through the Hall of Lifetimers. Even those on the highest shelves rattled gently as she passed. She'd save lives. The good could be spared and the bad could die young. It would all balance up, too. She'd show him. As for responsibility, well, humans always made changes. That was what being human was all about. Susan opened another door and stepped into the library. It was a room even bigger than the Hall of Lifetimers. Bookcases rose like cliffs. A haze obscured the ceiling. But of course it'd be childish, she told herself, to think that she could go in waving the scythe like a magic wand and turn the world into a better place overnight. It might take some time. So she should start in a small way and work out. She held out a hand. "I'm not going to do the voice," she said. "That's just unnecessary drama and really a bit stupid. I just want the Book of Imp y Kelin. Thank you very much." Around her, the busyness of the library went on. Millions of books quietly carried on writing themselves, causing a rustle like that of cockroaches. She remembered sitting on a knee, or rather sitting on a cushion on a knee, because the knee itself had been out of the question. Watching a bony finger follow the letters as they formed on the page, she learned to read her own life. "I'm waiting," said Susan, meaningfully. She clenched her fists. "Imp y Kelin," she said. The book appeared in front of her. She just managed to catch it before it fluttered to the floor. "Thank you," she said. She flicked through the pages of his life until she came to the last one and stared. Then she hastily went back until she found written neatly down, "His death in the drum." It was all there, all untrue. He hadn't died. The book was lying. Or, and this she knew was a far more accurate way of looking at it, the book was true and reality was lying. What was more important was that from the moment of his death, the book was writing music. Page after page had been covered with neat staves. While Susan watched, a clef drew itself in a series of careful loops. What did it want? Why should it save his life? And it was vitally important that she save him instead. She could feel the certainty like a ball bearing in her mind. It was absolutely imperative. She'd never met him up close. She'd not exchanged a word with him. He was just one person. But it was him she had to save. Grandfather had said she shouldn't do that sort of thing. What did he know about anything? He never lived. Blurt Wheedown made guitars. It was quiet, satisfying work. It took him and Gibson, the apprentice, about 5 days to make a decent instrument, if the wood was available and properly seasoned. He was a conscientious man who devoted many years to the perfection of one type of musical instrument, on which he himself was no mean performer. In his experience, guitarists came in three categories. There were the ones he thought of as real musicians who worked at the opera house or for one of the small private orchestras. There were the folk singers who couldn't play, but that was all right because most of them couldn't sing either. And then there were the troubadours and other swarthy types who thought a guitar was like a red rose in the teeth, a box of chocolates and a strategically placed pair of socks, another weapon in the battle of the sexes. They didn't play at all, apart from one or two chords, but they were regular customers. When leaping out of a bedroom window just ahead of an angry husband, the one thing a paramour is least concerned about leaving behind is his instrument. Blurt thought he'd seen them all. Mind you, first thing this morning, he'd sold some to some wizards. That was unusual. Some of them had even bought Blurt's guitar primer. The bell rang. "Yes?" Blurt looked at the customer and made a huge mental effort. "Sir?" It wasn't just the leather jerkin. It wasn't just the wristbands with studs. It wasn't just the broadsword. It wasn't just the helmet with the spikes. It was the leather and the studs and the sword and the helmet. This customer couldn't possibly be in categories 1 or 2, Bert decided. The figure stood looking uncertain, hands gripping convulsively, clearly not at home in a dialogue situation.
"This a guitar shop," it said.
Blurt looked around at the merchandise hanging from the walls and ceiling.
Yes, he said.
"I wants one."
As for category 3, he didn't look like someone used to bothering with chocolates or roses, or even hello. Blurt grabbed one at random and held it out in front of him.
"One like this?"